Hello, and welcome to the 96th episode of Cinema in Context. 96! My goodness, I don't think any of us could have imagined that we would get to 96 months of content when we started the podcast back in 2016. Look, just a little note from me. At the start of the episode, we talk about the Oscars ceremony, the 96th Oscars ceremony, which sounds like we planned this the whole time, that we would match 96 Oscars with 96 Cinema in Context. But we didn't. It's a coincidence. And you'll hear at the start that we even, I mean, I tell my partners that it's the 97th episode and get a little bit disappointed that we didn't match it up. So enjoy that little moment of misdirection. And I hope you enjoy this month's episode of Cinema in Context. Kia ora and welcome to Cinema in Context, where we discuss all things film and the connections between. My name is Jeremy Downing.
I'm William Chan.
And I'm Sarah Watt.
And each month at Cinema in Context, we discuss two films, one current and one retrospective, with some connection. It could be the same director, the same actor, or a similar theme. But this month, we are jumping into the Academy Awards ceremony, the number of Oscars. What
75th,
ceremony?
76th, 78th, 72nd, 70...
96th? 96th, yes.
That's almost our episode. This is the 97th episode.
Good Lord.
We should have done it for our 96th episode. Oh.
Life's full of regrets, isn't it?
It's close enough, isn't it?
Yes.
There we go. We're looking at the Oscars of 2024, celebrating the films that came out in 2023. And we thought that, you know, we usually do this as a mini-sode and we sort of can't really talk about everything. So we decided that we'd do a full-blown episode in, what's the word, debrief. We're debriefing the Oscars this year. Yeah. And I guess maybe before we jump in and talk about the categories, should we talk a little bit about the ceremony itself?
Yes.
And who hosted it, some of the highlights of the ceremony in terms of speeches and presentations. Maybe, Sarah, I'll hand it to you, because you watched the ceremony, didn't you?
I watched it live, which doesn't always happen. Now, for those of for our many, many listeners around the world, you may not appreciate that the ceremony happens in New Zealand at a rather awkward time of usually 11 or 12 o'clock during the middle of the day on a Monday, when most of us are at work and getting on with being productive citizens. So one doesn't always get to watch it. In the past, when I've taken time off to watch it, it has been crushingly disappointing because the last several Oscar ceremonies have been an absolute drag, an absolute bore, and either we've had wins from The Shape of Water, which, you know, forget about it, or it's just been a clean sweep of a perfectly good film or whatever. This year, my goodness, speaking from my own opinion, I thought the whole ceremony was absolutely wonderful. Of course, there were the highlights of things like Ryan Gosling's I'm Just Ken number, which we will talk about in great detail and deserves a podcast episode all of its own. But to me, everything about it was good compared with the Golden Globes recently and other ceremonies where everyone has felt a little bit stilted, muted. You've got actors up there presenting and you think, can you not string a piece of dialogue together? I just don't know what's been going on. This time, everybody was just in full force. The presenters, all of whom, of course, were luminaries of stage and screen, presented like they knew how to act and how to be funny, and they had comic timing, and they read things properly, and the energy was wonderful.
And Jimmy Kimmel was the host?
I thought Jimmy was really good, and of course, you know, luckily for him, perhaps he's coming hot on the heels of the bloke who did the Golden Globes and was slammed for it. And somehow it was well pitched, but also the writing was really good. And I know that they'll say, oh, well, last year there was a writer's strike or whatever and blah, 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 blah. I don't care. It's not that hard to write better script than we've had in the past. This year, to me, all of the scripts were super good and, as I say, super well delivered, and everything was fun.
Nice. Well, and did you catch much of the ceremony?
I did after the fact. They streamed it on Disney Plus, and so now it's readily available, which I'm very, very thankful for.
Yes.
In the past, you would have to use either, you know, semi-legal means of getting some streams or, you know, watching a lot of it in chunks on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. It was very, very competently put together. No massive disasters. Mm-mm. Like someone being punched on national TV.
Mm-mm.
Or someone reading out the wrong name for Best Picture.
Mm. Well, almost, because Al Pacino read the Best Picture winner without reading any of the nominees.
But apparently he was told to do that. So there's divided thought on the internet as to where he said the producers said to him, don't bother recapping the 10 nominees. We've all seen the clips throughout the whole season.
Is that
ceremony.
True? Holy moly.
I heard this, and he said I was just doing what I was told.
Stinked the other nominees.
But I mean, in a way, we didn't need them read out.
I mean, they all get their feature through the whole ceremony.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, they all get their airtime. I just think his delivery was a bit lame. And the fact that he kind of went, and so I guess I have to go to the envelope and my eyes are seeing Oppenheimer. You know, that anticlimactic delivery, I think, you know, I think Al Pacino, I think you've had a good run. But you hang up your hat now, mate.
Well, should we start with that then?
Well, can I say one more thing about the ceremony?
Yeah.
Yes.
Just a question to you guys. What did you think about the presentation of the acting category?
I liked it.
Instead of having clips, they had other people who had won the category in the past introduce the different nominees.
Did you know that, Jeremy?
Yes, and they've done this before.
Yes. Right?
This is not the first time they've done this.
I remember that.
I always love when they've done this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a wonderful way of honouring each of the actors that are nominated, as well as honouring past winners. There is a celebration of the community in that moment.
I agree. Tim Robbins. I mean, we haven't seen Tim Robbins in a dog's age, and yet there he is up there speaking to Robert De Niro.
Right.
So, you know,
and I mean, there's that wonderful connection between actor to actor, and it's quite exciting to think, okay, who are they pairing with who?
Ben Kingsley doing Cillian Murphy was very moving.
Right. It's really well put together, and I think that's a... You know, they always say it's just an honour to be nominated. And I think this really shows that even more.
I do. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Rather than just you've had a couple of months of lead up to this ceremony, we know you've been nominated, we know you're not going to win Carey Mulligan or whatever. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I thought it was really nice. And I agree with you. It's lovely to have that callback to people who have won in the past who we've forgotten about. Like Forrest Whitaker. You know, wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. How did you like it, William?
Yeah. It dragged on for a little bit sometimes, but for the most part, it was quite nice.
Mm.
At the beginning, where they were doing Best Supporting Actress, it seemed like there was a personal connection between the speech giver and the person they were nominating, which was really cool. But then as the night went on and you start realizing, it's not really the case, but still, it's fine.
Yeah, nice.
Well, let's start with the big ones. And I say that because they were won by, I guess, the same team, which is Oppenheimer winning Best Picture alongside 9 other nominees, I believe.
Yes.
And Christopher Nolan winning Best Director alongside 4 other nominees. What say thee?
I am going to leap straight in. Normally, I am very bored with Oscar ceremonies where one film gets all of the accolades. I like it to be a much more spread out playing field. Perhaps that's why I'm a teacher. But I have to say, and it's not even that I think Oppenheimer actually is the best film, actually. Although I'm not quite sure where I'd put my vote. But I do think that things like Maestro were wonderful in their own way and were completely neglected and so on. However, what I would say is, when we talk about a body of work and we talk about, particularly Chris Nolan getting Best Director, yes, I think probably his direction of Oppenheimer was exemplary, in which case that's valid. But moreover, I think that his direction, period, of every film he's ever done is extraordinary, and the man deserves an Oscar. And I do not resent I don't have any issue with his getting it, even if it isn't for the film he might. I think it was Scorsese, my beloved Marty, who got Best Director for The Departed.
That's right.
And The Departed was a really average film.
Yeah.
And it was by far and away, or far from being his best film.
Yeah.
And I guess the reason I didn't mind, in my sort of slightly arrogant way, is because Martin Scorsese is an excellent director, and I'm afraid he's lost out so many times. Therefore, okay, fine.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Nolan, I do think, did an extraordinary job with Oppenheimer. And if you, you know, watch the YouTube clips about the way that they did a lot of the practical effects and whatnot. I mean, he is a visionary. But I do think every film Nolan's made is extraordinary. So he can have that.
Nice. I felt his acceptance was really moving for Best Director. He genuinely seemed a little taken aback. And he was flustered. He was stumbling over his speech. And it's like, yeah, man, like... You've been overlooked so many times for amazing works of cinema, and he is one of the people who is honestly trying to keep the art of cinema alive.
Yeah, true.
And finally to be honored in this way, I thought was awesome. I enjoyed Oppenheimer fine enough. I don't begrudge it for winning Best Picture. The other Best Picture noms, I don't think there is a standout this year.
No, I think you could be right.
Anatomy of Fall is really, really good, but, you know, that would be my pick. But Oppenheimer...
Which one? Again, what?
Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, they're very, very different pictures.
Absolutely. And Zone of Interest. Very different again.
Yeah, they're so different. So, again, for me, Jeremy, like, perfectly happy with the Best Picture win and the Best Director win. For a movie like Oppenheimer, which at the same time is very Oscar-baity, but also it's in that golden crossover zone where, hey, a lot of people went to see it and it made a heck of a lot of money, so Hollywood just loves this stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree with you both. Mm. And I think that the direction of the film is impeccable and Nolan is brilliant. I've talked at length about my frustrations with his puritanical view of cinema and the way that it somehow doesn't seem to extend to audiences being able to hear what is happening.
Yeah, the mumbly audio of Tenet.
But I still love Nolan, you know, some of my favourite films are Nolan films. Yeah. I didn't love Oppenheimer, but probably more so for the choices of the story they wanted to tell, not because of the actual film itself. And I agree with you, I wouldn't necessarily put my money anywhere else over that. All really good films, though. I think the actual nominations this year were really strong. Mm. Sometimes with these 10 nominations, there's a couple in there I'm thinking... Oh,
I know! Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it's like scraping the middle of a barrel.
Coda! Yeah. Anybody? Coda? Oh, Coda?
Wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah.
What I will say is that the biggest cinema event last year was Barbenheimer.
Yeah.
And I felt like the ceremony and the nominations really reflected that. Part of me thinks, oh, it's a shame Barbie didn't win more. But then equally, I'm also like, it's amazing that it even got this many nominations.
I don't think it's a Best Picture type
film. No, it is different. But I mean, I loved Barbie. It was one of my favourite films of last year. Oppenheimer was not. Maestro was. Poor Things was absolutely up there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Have you seen Anatomy of a Fall?
No, I've yet to see that.
Wonderful. Have you seen Zone of Interest?
No, I want to see that.
Yeah,
desperately.
Great.
I saw Zone of Interest very, very recently. It's a strange movie.
It is strange.
I like... The only film of Glazer's I've seen before was Under the Skin, which haunts me to this day.
I love Jonathan Glazer.
Have you not seen Sexy Beast?
I haven't. I know.
Oh my gosh, Sexy Beast, which stars Sir Ben Kingsley as the... Have you not seen it?
No.
Oh my God, you guys would love it. Can we sit together and watch it?
Sure. Yeah, did we do both as well?
Glazer did. Ben Kingsley plays an East End gangster who has terrible use of the C word throughout the whole film, and he is absolutely frightening. Yeah, but he is absolutely frightening. Ray Winstone, it's an East End gangster movie. It is the greatest film of all time. So that is super fun. So shout out Jonathan, but I hear what you're saying. He does make quite creepy films otherwise.
I think I enjoyed Under the Skin a lot more than Zone of Interest, but they fall in the same category as almost like the director or the filmmaking team is anthropologically analyzing humans as if the filmmakers were aliens. It's like, isn't it interesting how things like this happen. We don't really understand as an audience what is going on, but we see through their lens.
Absolutely.
And it's very off-putting and it's very weird.
And very well done, though, I think. Yeah.
Can I push back on something you said, William, just because I take issue with it for obvious reasons. That the comment that, what would you say, Nolan is one of the few people that's championing cinema. What did you say? You said something like that. Like, Christopher Nolan's one of the few people that... I think I take issue with that, not because of your statement, but because he thinks he is. And when I look at the nominees, if I think about the films that I've seen, Oppenheimer,
Yorgos Lanthimos,
Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Poor Things, all of those films are doing things that are outside of the marvel of cinema.
They're all trying to push the boundaries.
Yeah, that's true.
And I get frustrated with Nolan thinking he is the only one that's... Because it comes across with really arrogant statements about technology and digital filmmaking and how people should watch movies in the cinema. And, you know, and I mean, Martin Scorsese's been infamously quoted about the state of cinema. But I do think he has a little bit more generosity with how he talks about
cinema. Sure, sure.
I think when Tarantino has his sort of puritanical views, he's also quite generous with with the breadth with which he ascribes great cinema. You know, he famously loves seeing
schlocky films.
I just get a little bit frustrated with Nolan's perspective on that. And so, I don't know, again, I think there's, and from what I hear with these other movies I haven't seen, there's some really cool stuff going on that is pushing the boundaries and upholding the kind of tenets of what makes good cinema.
You said tenet.
there you go.
The thing, so, I mean, we're flipping back and forth, which is all good. So I would say I've seen most of the Best Picture nominees. And American Fiction, for example, which I think neither of you's yet seen.
I saw it.
Oh, you have
it's
seen.
It's super fun.
Super fun. Yeah. So American Fiction is not, to my mind, a Best Picture cinematic film. It's a blimmin' good drama with a whole heap of comedy. It's excellent performances. It's an extremely incisive script and a very, very clever play on the sort of the issues of our times. Actually, most of the films have a play on the issues of our times. So American Fiction to me, and The Holdovers, similarly, neither of those.
I really want to see The Holdovers.
Gorgeous film. And again, extraordinary performances and an amazing script. And you know, at the very essence of any good art is amazing performances and a blooming good script. It doesn't have to be black and white. It doesn't have to be look like Dune or sound like Maestro. But, you know, if it does, more the better.
Speaking of sound, can we bounce that for a little bit?
Let's go.
And that's what I wanted to say about Zone of Interest.
Oh, right, you're right. My God, if there's one thing that Zone of Interest deserves to win more than anything else, the soundscape of that film is, I personally have never heard anything like this before.
Exactly. So I don't know if you know, and you won't know because you haven't seen the film yet, Jeremy.
But I've seen the doco, how they set up all of the, way they filmed the film. And
that's extraordinary. So it's interesting that you say, William, that there's almost an anthropological kind of perspective from Jonathan Glazer and the filmmaking team, because viewers, listeners, watchers may not know, but the Zone of Interest, which is set in a civilian residence directly outside the walls of Auschwitz during the war, and it's about the commander or one of the commanders of Auschwitz, he and his family living in a beautiful house with a beautiful garden and a swimming pool.
Upper middle class dream.
Exactly, and it just so happens that literally over the garden fence horrors are taking place. And the interesting thing in the way that the film was made is that the filmmakers set up cameras in a completely candid camera sort of way, and the actors just went about being in character, saying in domestic, in character kind of things, with very little direction and everything, so that the sound was picked up in all of the rooms concurrently and then edited together so that it sounded very much like it was just being in someone's house. Now, in terms of cinema being groundbreaking, that is very, very interesting and groundbreaking to me, because I don't know if anyone else has done it. Maybe someone has, but very few. So that to me makes interesting cinema. And then when you add on sort of a very subtle, nuanced moral story, what would it be like? And I wish I could say hypothetically, except we're living through it as we speak. What would it be like to carry on living your life knowing that atrocities were happening across the wall? Then suddenly it has all of those, all of the, and bloody good performances from Sandrine Hüller and so on.
MVP.
Then, yeah, all of a sudden it has everything going on for it that makes it a film of our time, plus an advance of cinema. Well, thank you for listening to my TED talk.
Well, can I talk about another one of the other nominees, but through the two categories that it did win, which is Poor Things.
Yes.
Which I believe I'm the only person
that's right.
Seen
neither
it.
Of us has seen it.
Yeah.
So I went to the cinema to see Poor Things, I think by myself, because I knew that the sexual content in particular was going to be quite
confronting.
Confronting. And there's only a couple of people I'd feel comfortable watching a film like that with, and they weren't available. So I went along because I didn't want to miss it. And it is. It's, I mean, I jokingly said in our chat, or not jokingly, but I laughed in our chat that it's now being streamed on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Because it's the most NC-17 rated film I've seen in a long time. And for listeners outside of the States, NC-17 is the rating that is held back for, you know, beyond R, which would be like our R-18, I guess, wouldn't it? Which is usually a surefire way to tank your film at the box office, or has been in the past. It's an incredible film. I think the production design, one production design, absolutely deserved. And there are some incredible films around production design.
Yeah, Barbie.
Barbie, man. I think Napoleon is another amazing one. Yeah,
that's right. And Killers of the Flower Moon, which, man.
Oh, and Oppenheimer. So I mean, all five of those nominees are amazing. But Poor Things creates this Metropolis-like David Lynch, Jean-Pierre Jeunet world. Mm. You know, it's very much... what's the first Jean-Pierre Jeunet film? Not Delicatessen, the one before it. The children one.
Oh, City of Lost Children.
City of Lost Children. It really reminds me of that.
Right, because I saw a screenshot from Poor Things with a sort of Art Deco thing over the water, which is very City of Lost Children.
Yeah, and it's incredible. It's got Terry Gilliam elements to it. And it, you know, that's down to cinematography as well. But the way they've designed this film is just spectacular. Mm. The costumes are amazing. The title sequences... the use of technology, you know, black and white in sections and highly pumped up contrasting colours in other parts. It is glorious to look at. And then, of course, the lead performance from Emma Stone. I am surprised she won.
I thought Lily Gladstone would win.
Yeah, I mean, I did enjoy Emma Stone's performance more than Lily Gladstone.
Sure.
But I also enjoyed Carey Mulligan's performance in Maestro more than Emma Stone. Mm. But Emma Stone... I think the thing that made me feel incredibly uncomfortable watching this movie was it features so heavily on a woman's sexuality in a male-dominated world, and the scriptwriter and the director are both men, and I felt like I had a big question mark around that. Until, Sarah, you sent me that clip where Olivia Colman interviews Emma Stone on a Zoom call, I believe, and they're good friends from The Favourite. And Olivia Colman puts that criticism to Emma Stone, and Emma Stone says, I'm a bit frustrated by that because... I'm a producer on the film. I was integral in how we crafted these scenes.
Mm.
And so my female voice was a big part of that. She says, I know that it's a big problem that there are directors that ask women to do things they're not comfortable with, but that was not the case here.
Mm.
And I think that allayed all of my concern, especially since all of my female friend critics that I've spoken to that have seen the film didn't share the concerns that I had. And so that made me feel like I could... actually just enjoy what was on show. Because what is on show has a really clear sense of purpose. Right. And it's beautifully crafted.
Mm.
And Emma Stone's performance is amazing. She is amazing.
Mm. So I sent you that thing because I was in two minds about which way to feel about this film. Now, you might say, and I have to be honest, you might say, well, you haven't seen it, Sarah, you can't have a view. But I had read a lot, I'd spoken to people, my sister and you and other people who had seen it. And... so I thought, well, I'm not sure how I feel about this. So the Olivia-Emma conversation allayed certain fears in terms of exploitation, perhaps, or agency and whatnot. However, I do not think that that detracts from what is portrayed and the complexities of what is portrayed. Now, I would say that concerns about that are mitigated if at least all of the parties involved are agentic and are on board with it. That's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. But if viewers feel that the content is problematic because it portrays a woman of immature intellect engaging in certain acts, and therefore there are issues about whether it can be fully consensual, etc. Or, you know, are we allowed to spoiler in this? I'm not sure.
It's hard for me because my key criticism... Well, my key concern of this film is not the sex. It's a certain part of the story, which I would have to spoil.
I see.
So
okay.
I don't think we can.
Okay, never mind. But do you feel then, whatever your concern is around that certain part of the story, is the certain part of the story problematic in and of itself, or by dint of the way that it is made, and would it be assuaged by Emma Stone saying, no, it's okay, I was into it?
I think in and of itself.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about. And that's what I suspect... the people that I value who have seen it and still have issues with it might be saying. So that becomes a bigger issue. Now then, of course, I suppose we're opening a blimmin' can of worms, aren't we, that says, well, should you make a film ostensibly about the Holocaust that doesn't address the fact that there are 6 million Jews dying over the fence, etc. So, full stop, new paragraph. Interesting though, eh?
I think you both should watch the film. It is wonderful.
Yeah,
and,
I've heard that aesthetically, absolutely.
And just there's a lot of, I mean, Willem Dafoe is brilliant. The man who plays his second in command, who, you know, early in the film gets engaged to Emma Stone's character.
Yeah, the young
fellow.
Not a
huge spoiler. Her fiance. He's brilliant, and Mark Ruffalo is just having a blast.
Do you know what the funny thing is? I knew nothing about the film before it came out because it hadn't come out. So actually, when I first saw the trailer, I didn't want to see the film. I was like, I'm not interested in seeing this. Nothing to do with sexual politics or anything, because I didn't even know that was going to be part of it. I looked at it and went, ugh, Terry Gilliam, weirdness, crazy faces, people acting completely, like, hyperbolically, like they're mad or whatever. I'm not into it. I'm not interested. So I don't want to see it. So I already had that prejudice even before there was any other reason for me to be prejudiced.
It's interesting for me to think about this film coming off the year where Saltburn was sort of the
which
the talk
I had
of the
no
town.
Issue with.
Well, Saltburn for me was like it was like it was trying to be a Poor Things, but
sure.
It had no teeth. And I think that Poor Things has something to say, whereas I just think Saltburn was a bit vapid.
Oh, it didn't have anything to say at all, but it was such fun. You see, this is I absolutely bloody loved it. But yeah, no, that you're absolutely right. It's not a.
Did Saltburn get any nominations?
I don't think so.
Wow, I would have thought it got
Pike.
Something.
Oh no, did Rosamund? No, Rosamund wasn't.
I mean,
okay.
More in terms of the
cinematography,
script,
yeah, something.
Oh my god!
No, not script.
If Saltburn had gotten a nomination for script, I would have been a pretty unhappy
okay.
boy.
Me too. So maybe not then. Maybe not.
that script, I think, is the biggest issue
yeah.
in that
okay,
film.
Okay,
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
So no, don't think it did.
Oh, I lie as well. Poor Things got makeup and
hair.
Yeah, but I mean... but I mean, that's important, but
like,
but it's
Napoleon,
not that important.
Napoleon and Barbie, again, that was pretty stiff competition, but it's... Yeah, again, I haven't
and
seen
Maestro,
Poor Things, but...
And Maestro.
Oh, yeah, Maestro... Jeez, Maestro for makeup, that is a snub, I would say.
I would
Maestro
say so,
anything?
Too.
No.
And that's
no.
a huge
neither,
snub.
Neither did Killers of the Flower Moon.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel worse. I mean, you know, as I say, Uncle Marty, was it 9 nominations? I mean, I think that's really mean to invite someone along, make them sit through 9 nominations and give them nothing. But of course, this isn't a...
Oh, but this is Martin Scorsese who makes us sit through 4-hour films.
Oh, shut up! He's earned it! But never mind that. I think... I think the films that went away with absolutely nothing. Maestro, I feel that Bradley Cooper has been so gracious.
He wasn't nominated for director for Maestro or for Star is Born.
I know.
The Academy
hate
him.
That's so mean. And yet he's not hateable. He hasn't roughed anyone up the wrong way or anything.
You can listen back to our Maestro episode. I thought Maestro was fine.
But he does, yeah. But I mean, look, he's somebody to watch, and maybe therefore, maybe he'll be the Chris Nolan, and he'll have to do 12 films before somebody actually says, "Hey, good job, mate."
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Special effects, I think. Speak of sound and bouncing off that, Godzilla Minus One winning, heck yeah,
that was cute. Yeah,
that was very, very cool. And then you get a whole bunch of nerds on stage with Godzilla figurines and Godzilla shoes.
Yeah,
yes. Please.
I sort of seen it, but you've raved about it, William.
I think,
good.
Sarah, you liked it more than I. I thought it was, to use that word again, I thought it was fine.
I thought it was better than I was expecting.
I enjoyed Shin Godzilla a lot more than I liked Godzilla Minus One. But again, they're very, very different films.
It's a very unusual film, though, to wind up in an Academy's shortlist, let alone win a film.
And win, which
it's,
is,
you know.
Yeah. I think the only one that, for me, really matched its kind of special effects, not aesthetic, kind of approach is The Creator.
Yeah.
Which, man, the effects. Are you guys fans of Corridor Crew, the YouTube channel?
Don't know.
It's
no,
like
I
special
mean, no.
effect. Special effects artists react.
Mm. Yes, I watched this. Yep.
And so they get Gareth Edwards on for 2 episodes, and he breaks down so much of The Creator. And again, say what you will about his writing and his characterization, and we have.
And we didn't love that film, but
we
did love it.
I mean, that light beam coming down, and the use of. How he did on such a budget. Which is just amazing.
But,
how the guy and his team approaches special effects scenes is extraordinary.
Yeah.
And they do it on such a limited budget and make it seem fresh and unique. And it's just, I'm happy he's the guy directing the next Jurassic Park movie.
Oh,
because
cool.
I think with a good script, it could be something really special.
Yeah,
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 true.
Yeah,
and I mean, it can't get any worse than where they've gone with that series. Oh, I do think that in terms of this year, that Dune 2 has a really good foot in the door with special effects.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
What else have we had this year that could be up for that?
Well, Mad Max is coming out.
Oh, right. Of course. That looks far more CGI. The Civil War.
Mm.
Yep. That's going to be amazing.
Will be coming.
Yeah.
So getting back to the films that were then, how do we feel about Lily Gladstone not winning? I thought her performance was excellent, but I didn't think it was an Oscar performance. But at the same time, maybe it is because it was subtle. But then I thought, oh my God, they've given it to Emma's, which was a really over the top.
I can't really comment on this because, again, I just haven't seen the film. I think once I do see Poor Things, stay tuned.
Yeah.
Gladstone was great. I've loved her. Again, I know her mainly through her cameo appearances in Reservation Dogs and then through Killers of the Flower Moon. But it's a very, very good performance. Mm. Yeah. Subtle, not super showy. Not a lot of it. Maybe she could have had space to do more.
Well, it's funny that they say that really she should have been supporting actress, not best actress.
Because she's not the lead of that film.
No.
Yeah.
Leo and Robert are.
But you've got to have a lead woman, though.
Yeah, I know. I think that's probably the biggest thing.
I think Carey Mulligan was more nuanced and extraordinary.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would say so.
And there was no chance that she was going to get it. Mm. Sandrine Hüller was the other one for Anatomy of a Fall, which is a brilliant film. But it's very much it is a best foreign film, and it should have won, and it did a win. No, wait,
it wasn't even nominated.
I'm sorry, it didn't win. Yeah, it was nominated.
No, France didn't put it up for best foreign.
Oh, yeah, they put that silly Chocolat one or something. So you're right. So
that's our Zone of Interest one. Film from the
best
UK. Which...
film. Yeah, in German. So Anatomy of a Fall, though, won Best Screenplay for Sandrine, so that was wonderful.
Well, can we talk about that? Because I think one of the strangest things, we have mentioned in our chat at some point, and I guess it just comes down to the rules of the Academy, but you have Barbie
as
in
an adaptation, which is stupid.
And you have Maestro in Best Original.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, how does this work?
Well, I mean, it doesn't really matter that Maestro's original if... the script itself is original.
Yeah, but you've got a whole life of content to draw from. Whereas
Barbie as an adaptation is ludicrous.
Well, you've just got properties,
it's,
right?
It's a property, yeah.
You've got Ken and Barbie. And
yes,
all
but
the...
it's screenplay.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, like...
Is it something to do with the guilds and their rules?
It's stupid. Because Ken has never actually spoken in anybody's game of Barbie and Ken. And like, so there's nothing that they're adapting. Yeah. They're making that up fresh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do not think that America Ferrera needed to be up for Best Supporting Actress.
And yeah, that was interesting.
I just think that that monologue from Barbie just... Look, I'm terrible. I mean, I thought it was great, but I thought, yeah, we already know this. But it was almost like the world went, wait, what?
Yeah.
Is it hard being a woman?
Again, go back to the Barbie episode. I didn't think it was great. I thought that was the worst part of the movie. It was like, show, don't tell, please.
Yeah,
show,
well,
don't tell.
Exactly. But this is maybe because we already know. Yeah. So, you know.
Oh, I love the monologue. That to me
the whole
the
world went, oh my goodness, this is amazing. No one's ever said this
before. I guess for me, Jeremy, it was a thesis statement that had already been made several times in the film. And
I suppose,
you know,
but it's
like, it's... you don't need to treat us like dummies, movie.
Yeah, I suppose I just loved how it was a Barbie movie that was having its cake and eating it too, and they needed to appeal to so many different quadrants of the
fine, but
audience.
It's not a best screenplay moment. It's not a best supporting actress performance or anything like that.
I mean, it captured the zeitgeist in a way that we
I'm not
seen
interested
in
the zeitgeist. I'm talking good art. Can I say I loved Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling doing their little
Barbenheimer battle.
Very, very funny. And honestly, I think I always knew that she was funny and witty and clever and had good timing. Yeah. But she's brilliant,
baby.
That's true. I was watching
a clip of it was an interview between her and. What's her name? Devil Wears Prada. I can't think of her name.
Anne Hathaway
and her, and Emily Blunt was rereading some of her favourite lines, and she said something like, "Are you going to a bad shirt convention or something? Like bad blouse convention?"
Yeah.
And in the movie, she laughs, and apparently, she just couldn't get through that line without laughing. It's just genuinely her laughing because it's such a cruel line. And even when Emily Blunt reads it to Anne Hathaway in that moment, she laughs as well because you couldn't get through that. Anyways, she's wonderful.
That moment, though, where they were, you know, basically advertising Fall Guy and, you know, best stunts.
Oh, they were too. I
wish there was a best stunts category. It's just paying lip service
to something.
I thought
there was one that's coming.
No.
Oh, it's best casting that's coming next year.
Okay.
Did you know that? There's going to be an award for best casting.
How many more acting awards can they put?
Best casting is
how you choose your actors. Yeah.
Absolutely, and did you choose well?
It's a strange.
It's an interesting category.
I suppose they recognize how powerful that is. I mean, Ridley Scott always says that's 80% of the work is picking the right actors.
And it's
for the
not
roles.
Necessarily saying, and this person's Performance was amazing. It was, are they right for the role?
And I guess it is like an ensemble piece without pointing at the acting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows how it'll go? You could argue, well, no, you couldn't. I was going to say anybody who cast Daniel Day-Lewis in anything might win that. Not necessarily. But if you cast Daniel Day-Lewis in Phantom Thread, great. Yeah. There's your great casting, you know.
Hey, well, on the topic of Emily Blunt and
Ryan Gosling,
let's talk about I'm Just Ken.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I've watched it 600 million times. I liked it at the time in the movie. I remember thinking that was a great number. Oh my gosh.
And Mark Ronson's in it. Was
Simu Liu. All the other Kens were in it.
No, they were too.
And Slash. And the reveal. I've watched it so many times that, you know, they hide him underneath all of those Barbie faces. Yeah. And then there he is.
Oh.
And also Ryan sings live.
Yeah. And such good voice.
The choreography.
He's like cracking up through some of it. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And I loved how it starts. And oh my God. And the audience goes, I see what's happening here.
I loved the Marilyn Monroe. Is it all gentlemen?
Gentlemen prefer blondes.
Or the Madonna moment from the Terry Bill. The pink stairs and his pink suit. Absolutely. It's so funny.
So well done.
Is that really cute moment between Gosling and Emma Stone, La La Land.
Yes.
Yeah. She breaks her dress, right?
In
her speech, she was like, I broke my dress. And during I'm Just Ken. I'm Just Ken.
So he was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And that lifted the whole... Just I mean, it didn't lift it because the whole thing was going well,
but
it was amazing.
A blast of energy. Yeah. A blast of energy.
It's better than Hugh Jackman and I forgot her name again. What's her name? Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
Trying to sing like this and we are funny.
Yeah.
I don't normally give two hoots for the musical numbers in the things, but I thought that Billie Eilish and Phineas doing What Was I Made For was exquisite. I didn't even care about that song when the film came out, and I don't listen to modern day pop music because I'm stuck in the 80s. But oh my gosh, absolutely sensational as a musical number. Just terrific. So,
Actually, those two juxtaposed reminded me, I sent you guys the Lego movie Everything Is Awesome back in 2014. But do you remember when that was nominated at the same time as, what's that song called? I'm Lying on the Moon from Her.
It's just
this acoustic piece. And it's very, very intimate, very, very quiet. And suddenly, like, everything is awesome. People flipping.
Oh, do they do like a medley of
awesome. No. But it's separated acts.
All the five songs. Yeah, within one ceremony.
Just this amazing juxtaposition.
I mean, the one I mentioned as well was the Kiss at the Edge of the Rainbow from A Mighty Wind with Eugene Levy and
Catherine
O'Hara.
Yeah.
Which came out the same year as Lord of the Rings Return of the King, which famously swept up the awards, including Best Song.
That's right.
But
seeing
Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, and then they do the kiss on stage, and the whole audience is like waiting and bated breath. And I saw that. I mean, talking about Monday daytime being when we have the Oscars. That ceremony was when I was in my last year of high school, and I remember I must have taken the Monday off school, and or maybe the afternoon or something, and went and watched it at my friend's house next door to the school. Her family had Sky TV, which was the only way you could
watch it. That's right. Hey, Rupert Murdoch.
And I, and then I watched that performance, having never seen A Mighty Wind, so I didn't really have any context, but knew something was going on that was interesting. And so then to watch the film eventually and rewatch that scene, it's quite lovely.
I know I've said this on a previous Oscars podcast, but we've got new listeners. My bestest, favouritest Oscars ever was, I think, 93, and I was at university. And you're absolutely right. The only place that had Sky was Shadows, the student pub at Auckland University. And so at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I think it was a 1 o'clock kickoff, went up there. And it was the year that The Piano won.
Nice.
And Anna Paquin got up and hyperventilated through her little speech. And Holly Hunter won, and Jane won Best Screenplay. Mm-hmm. And that was absolutely what a perfect year in my cinephilia, my cinema growing life, as well as the Oscars being that film that I had seen three times. So that was pretty neat. But this one's been great. I can't stop singing I'm Just Ken anywhere else I'd be a ten.
I think it's worth saying as well that we're finally getting out of the COVID slump. And that whilst we had the writer's strike, which we'll see how that affects the films coming out in the next couple of years, these movies were, most of them were made post-COVID. And it's nice. It's nice to see this level of quality. We've not actually seen that the last few years. Mm. It has been scraping the barrel.
Mm.
I mean, what have our Best Picture winners been? Was last year Coda, or was it the year before?
Year before
was Coda.
What was last year's?
It was, wasn't it Chloe Zhao's movie? Or was that the
It wasn't
year before?
Nomadland. That was a couple of years prior. Yeah, that was 2019 or something.
Oh, it was Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, yeah.
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 Have you watched that yet?
Not all of it.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm so ridiculous. I've had two stabs at it and I don't care. Isn't that terrible?
That's
I'm
cool.
Such a philistine.
So next month, listeners, we have a different person on the podcast.
I thought you were going to say next month. Sarah will have seen.
Yeah, yeah. So we had Everything Everywhere All at Once. We had Coda with the Will Smith slap the year before.
Mm,
No, last year was the Will Smith slap.
No, it was two years ago.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I was on school camp and then someone came running and was like, Sir, Will Smith just slapped Chris Rock.
I thought that was just last year.
Because I remember, what I remember is that Lady Gaga, as I would remember, because it's Lady Gaga, but Lady Gaga and Liza Minnelli presented it to Coda, which I always thought that... I remember they must have been sitting in the tension of the Will Smith slap.
Right. Mm.
Yeah. And what was the year before that? So we had...
Well, that was Nomadland, right?
And Parasite. It was Parasite.
Parasite was 2020, right?
Yeah. And Nomadland, I thought, was 2019. One. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How it all blurs into one.
Yeah. I love Nomadland.
Yeah.
Shape of Water.
Very, very different.
Shape of Water was 2019.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Wow.
Terrible film.
Oh, you think so?
We didn't mind it at the time, we just didn't want it to win Oscars.
Yeah. It was weird.
It had Michael Shannon doing his Michael Shannon.
I know the whole central thesis of that film is a woman falling in love with a fish, but
yeah.
I can't even. Yeah.
All right. Any last minute thoughts in terms of other categories?
Yeah. Animated. I still haven't seen Boy and the Heron. Did you guys like it?
Oh yeah, I saw it.
I liked it. It's weird.
Yeah. It's fine.
The logic's a bit. Story logic. I mean, is a bit.
It's impenetrable for little people, which is fine. And I think I had a nap.
It does feel like a greatest hits of
Miyazaki.
And so there's a bit of Mononoke and Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle. Yeah. It does feel like that. But I think the joy of going into your backyard and exploring and finding a hidden world, that's always going to be interesting.
What was it up against?
Spider-Verse, Nimona, Elemental, and Robot Dreams, which was kind of... A lot of the people in the animation community wasn't a fan of that because it just came out like late February.
Mm.
And it did some shenanigans where they had some preview screenings and that's how it got
shenanigans,
nominated.
True. Yeah.
But again, I think we all really loved Spider-Verse, right?
Groundbreaking in a lot of ways.
Spider-Verse win?
It did win.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, if it's doing the same thing, you don't need to give it another one.
Yeah. I thought Nimona was brilliant, but again, it's such a small picture. You don't really expect
and Elemental was fine, but it wasn't like a Elemental was fine. It did some interesting things, but it's not a Best Picture film.
And
did you want to talk about your
I want to talk about Best Documentary.
William was very passionate
about Best Doc. As long as so my Oscars dream list, gents and ladies, is Ladies and Germs. I wanted one film not to win, and it didn't. And I was very, very happy about that.
What film was that?
And that film was Island in Between, which is a Taiwanese documentary about Jingmen.
Oh, that's right.
About what?
So Jingmen, which is a tiny island really close to China. Officially, it's part of Taiwan, but it's kind of straddling the fence. Apparently, the documentary is fine. It's all good. But the director, just on the publicity tool, comes off as such a jerk.
Right. So for listeners, we don't mark our episodes as explicit, so we have to find other ways to describe.
A nincompoop.
Nincompoop.
Yeah.
A jerk.
He does not seem like a very nice guy.
Ooh,
And so I was like, I sure hope his film doesn't win. And it didn't.
I do love that the Oscars still honor shorts and documentaries and documentary shorts because what do they do? Do they have three short categories? It's an animated documentary and short films.
That's right.
And it's such a pathway for filmmakers. If you think about your Taika Waititi's and And it's what a great way to support, which I guess is why they do it, to support up-and-coming talent.
With Best Doctor Show, by the way, I did end up watching The Winner, which is free on YouTube. And
best
also
of, Best of what, love?
Doctor Short.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which is called The Last Repair Shop. It's about a musical instrument repair shop in... the burbs of LA. No, not the burbs of LA. In a city, LA. It's also on Disney Plus. It's really nice.
Okay.
It's
very, very cute. That's good. I'm going to watch that. Yeah.
Very, very heartwarming to see kids and, you know, the part that music plays in their lives. Good stuff.
Nice. Yeah. Any last minute comments?
In terms of best documentary feature, I have seen 2 of the 5. So I can only speak about 2 of the 5. I haven't seen 20 Days in Mariupol, but it is available, and that's the one that won, but it is available online, and it is worth seeing, and I shall. That's on DocPlay, among other places, and okay. I definitely will, and that's the one set in the Ukraine. But the one that I had seen is 4 Daughters. It's highly, highly recommended. It is about, it's a story of a Tunisian family. There's the mother, and ostensibly 4 daughters, except that 2 of the older daughters have long since disappeared. And by disappeared, they mean been radicalized and have left the family. So the documentary to me was absolutely fascinating because the way that they made the filmmakers made the film is they got the mum and the 2 remaining daughters to act as themselves. They employed actresses to play the 2 missing daughters. Wow. And even when you see the family of the 2 actresses plus the 3 originals coming together and going, oh my gosh, you look like her, you sound like her. And then there's footage of them hanging out and being a family. Whoa. So the lines are so blurred. And then you've got the mother who actually plays herself as well as there's an actress playing the mother. So the mother then, we see her directing the actress and saying, now you need to beat him really hard because that's what he did on our wedding night and la-di-da. So it's a fascinating dramatization / documentary / I don't even know what. It was like...
It sounds amazing.
It was amazing. Yeah. And it's the sort of... I've never seen a structure like that.
It reminds me...
of just the act of killing?
How you, yes, exactly. I was just going to say the act of killing.
Senecto, New York as well.
Oh, okay. Well, The Act of Killing was a documentary in Indonesia many years ago where they... And I'm sort of saying this to the viewers, listeners, watchers, whatever, that the Joshua Oppenheimer... Oppenheimer. I think that's right.
Best picture.
Joshua Oppenheimer, the filmmaker, American filmmaker, went and spoke to death camp leaders from Indonesia who decades prior had murdered thousands or however many of people and then said, hey, you know, I'd like you to act out the way that you behaved in, which is an extraordinary...
premise.
Extraordinary premise, an extraordinary format for a documentary and also very, very disturbing. Now, I guess the similarity with 4 Daughters is... these women have been through a lot of trauma. And then you think, well, are they reliving this trauma by acting it out for us so that we understand what's happening? Or actually, is there a degree of catharsis, a degree of understanding, etc.? Anyway, none of that is a spoiler. Just watch 4 Daughters. Ooh, cool. It's a very tremendous film. And if it had won, that would have been great. But of course, the Ukraine is now. And next year, there'll be a documentary about Gaza. I don't mean that in a cynical way. I'm just saying, you know. Yeah.
It's a relevant and an important piece
of it. Right.
Speaking of Gaza, I mean, Jonathan Glazer's speech was incredible.
So I don't know if you saw that. Jonathan Glazer, he wasn't even that polemical. He simply said, as a Jewish man, I denounce my Jewishness because of what's going on. And and higher ups in the Jewish community in Britain have come out and are very angry with him for saying such a thing.
His speech is no longer on YouTube. It's been struck from the records, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but it will still be in the Disney Plus ceremony.
Yes. They just didn't put it up. They put everything else. Yeah.
And the interesting thing about Jonathan Glazer, and then eventually I'll stop, but the interesting thing is... it's lovely that his film was up for Best Picture and that he was up for Best Director, and he didn't really need or wish to win either. Yeah. He's not that guy. You get the sense from him that he is making the film for the film's sake, and that's why he does interesting, digressive stuff. Do I mean digressive? I mean, you know, difficult, challenging kind of stuff that divides audiences, and that's fine with him. That's what he's in for. So And he's doing it in, as we've said, a really interesting, innovative, cinematic kind of way. So I'm glad that he won Best International Picture, because it is a tremendous cinematic film. But he's not there for the accolades and the wins. And he seemed kind of, if not uncomfortable, at least incredibly humble and very much like, I just made this film. Wasn't trying to be Oscar baiting when he made it. And for him to sort of just very quietly go, look, really not happy with what's going on, this, and I feel awkward about this. Well, I think that's an okay thing to say. But it's the world that we live in, isn't it?
And on that note, I did find it very, very amusing that the Best Animated Doco was literally titled War Is Over. Based on the music of John Lennon. And his son came up and started talking about how great his dad was.
Gosh. All right. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Cinema in Context. If you enjoy our podcast, then please share it with your film-loving friends. You can listen to Cinema in Context on SoundCloud, Spotify, Radio Public, Stitcher, Amazon Music, and Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, which are great places to let us know what you think of this episode, as well as give us suggestions for future films to discuss and compare. Look out for our next episode in a month's time, which is based on Dune 2 and The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh yeah.
And until then,
noho ora mai!